WILL AM 580 and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 Urbana.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, a production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Welcome to Keepin' the Faith. Our guests today are going to be talking about the situation on the West Bank of Israel, or in the area of the Palestinian Authority, or in Palestine. How you'd even describe this gets very political. But we have three recent visitors to Palestine, which includes Bethlehem. And let me introduce, first of all, John Sutherland, who's been our guest before, who's a Lutheran pastor who lived in Palestine for 2 years and is now back in Champaign-Urbana. Welcome, John.
Thank you.
And he recently led a trip that included 18 people, and two of those folks are in our studio with us today. Diane Wardrop is to my left. Welcome, Diane.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. And Gary Storm. Gary was guest on Keeping the Faith earlier, talking about some ethical educational issues, and we're happy to have him back today. Let me give the phone numbers for listeners who might like to join the conversation. We're always eager to have people talk with our guests here on Keeping the Faith. If you're in Champaign-Urbana, you can punch in 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. And if it's long distance, perhaps you're listening on the internet or anywhere else, 1-800-222-9455 is a toll-free call. So if it's long distance, 1-800-222-WILL. Well, we are live today here on the 20th of December. It's 27 degrees out, snowing here. The roads are a bit treacherous, I'm told. So please be careful if you're listening and driving. And you might not try to call on your cell unless you pull over and stop. Well, let's get started. John, let's start with you. What's the religious situation in the Holy Land, particularly Bethlehem, right now?
Well, the Holy Land, which, by the way, is the title I use often because it's the only name for that area that isn't highly politicized.
Yes.
And it's holy to the Jewish religion, to the Muslim religion, and to the Christian religion. Now, Christians are only a small fraction of the total population. Probably
of people who live there, the residents. Yes.
Probably less than 5%, which is a humbling fact for us Christians. To remember. The rest of the population is divided rather evenly between Jews and Arabs. The Arabs are mainly Muslims. The few Christians that are there are basically Arab peoples as well. So we have Jews and Arabs. The Arabs are divided unevenly between Muslims and Christians.
And the Christians who live in the Holy Land are Protestant, Catholic, Orthodox, Coptic?
All of the above. The Greek Orthodox is the most populous of the Christian denominations there. Roman Catholic, or the Latin Christians as they're called there, are second. There are several Eastern churches, Armenians for one, that are not well known in the United States, but that are visible and active in that area. Then there are a couple of Protestant churches. The Anglicans have a beautiful cathedral in Jerusalem, and the Lutherans have a bishop and a large church in Jerusalem as well.
And you've been on this program several times over the past 10 years, two times by phone live from Palestine. You lived in the next town over from Bethlehem, Bet Jala. You were able to give us a lot of insight on those programs. But you've been back now in this country how long?
A year and a half since I moved back.
Since you moved back after your 2 years there. What have you heard and what did you discover on this trip that was new or that had changed?
I don't think there's been a lot of change. The political situation is not improving. There is a standoff between the powers that be, namely the government of Israel and the would-be government or governments of the Arab peoples in the area. And it is not clear that there's going to be any peaceful reconciliation between these people. We hope so. The people there hope so. But the signs of it are still not visible.
Now, Jordan is trying to help with some peaceful efforts in that area, hoping to come up with some kind of a treaty similar to what Israel has with Egypt that really hasn't been fully implemented yet, and it hasn't gotten much press in this country at all. But there are some signs that, at least in Jordan, there's an effort to find a way to be helpful between the Israelis and the Palestinians politically.
The people of Jordan have a very intelligent and enlightened king. They're lucky for that. The world is lucky. Of course they would like peace in their next-door neighbors. They don't really know what to do about it. Half the population of Jordan already is Palestinian refugees living in refugee camps that the government of Jordan is supposed to support. They certainly can't handle any more. They don't know what to do about it.
And there have been Christians in Jordan tracing themselves back to the first century, some claim, just as there have been Christians in Israel and Palestine.
And in other nations in the Middle East.
Sure. Well, we have much to learn, and let's talk a little bit about with Gary and Diane. Was this your first trip to the Holy Land? Diane?
It was my first trip, yes.
And the same here, Steve.
Same for you. And what had you expected before you went, and why did you choose to go? Diane?
I didn't know what to expect. I had long wanted to go. As a Christian, I've long wanted to go to the Holy Land. But I also am always curious about conflicts, political situations, and trying to understand both sides of an issue. So going gave me an eyewitness, hands-on view of both sides, a peek at both sides of the issues.
And what prejudices did you go with? What did you start with before you got on the airplane?
Tough question, Steve.
Oh, I'm known for that.
I might jump in. I was just going to say that probably one of the things that motivated me personally to explore the trip was an opportunity I had about 3 years ago to attend a PowerPoint presentation by a woman named Anna Balzer, who is a young American Jewish woman who at a point in her graduate studies in the Middle East decided that she really wanted to go over to Israel and explore firsthand.
Was she a student from the University of Illinois or somewhere?
No, I honestly don't remember where she had gotten her undergraduate education. But she
not
was
from
over
here.
There. Okay. Yeah, right. And but she spent a considerable number of weeks traveling in the Palestinian territory and throughout Israel, and was just, as an American Jew, really shocked and surprised at the conditions she found. And that ultimately motivated her to affiliate with some organizations that were really trying to understand and advocate the situation on behalf of the Palestinians there.
And so it was the situation of the Palestinians that concerned her when she got
right.
there, not so much the Israelis?
Well, I think that what she was just shocked about was the – I think her – I don't want to speculate too much, but she just had no idea of the conditions on the ground and the kind of difficulties that the Palestinian people were experiencing.
So because of that presentation, you did go kind of expecting
right.
to see some pretty bad living
well,
conditions.
Well, I mean, I certainly was prepared for that.
Yeah.
And really, one of the things that Anna Balzer really recommended to individuals who wanted to learn more was to simply take advantage of a number of opportunities that there are to travel.
To go there.
Yeah. And I think that
John has said that many times.
Right.
And when he organized this tour, I know that was one of your goals, wasn't it, John, to try to let people from America who tend to hear through the public news media, even NPR, perhaps not a totally balanced picture.
Right. The situation there is so confusing and so irrational that I think you have to see it almost to believe it, at least to have any deep sympathy for it, to understand who these people are and to see that they are in fact all decent human beings trying to live in peace, trying to go to work, send their children to school, and have some kind of hope for the future.
Well, let me press you a little bit. When you say, and I know you're in your typical pastoral way or trying to be kind to everyone, but when you use a phrase like all the people are trying to work together for peace, what about the people who bomb buses in Israel and what about the Israelis who are so violent in terms of their response to those things?
I'll amend my claim to 95% of the people.
All right.
The radicals on both sides. Of course, the dream of radicals is to have the other side disappear.
Yeah, yeah.
The normal people, however, realize that isn't going to happen. We're all here to stay. The sooner we can coexist, the sooner there will be a peace and a general prosperity of the area.
Let me remind listeners, this is a live program being broadcast today, December 20th. Here on WILL, Keeping the Faith. If you'd like to call and ask a question or make a comment, 333-9455 is the number in Champaign-Urbana. That's an area code 217. But if it's a long-distance call, do use our 800 number, 222-9455. And people we know are listening at will.illinois.edu on the AM channel there. Dan, we've given you a couple minutes to think about your answer to that tough question. Did you have any opinions formed sort of in advance?
I didn't have – I had more of a rosy picture formed in advance from, you know, whatever American media that I've read and from a Christian perspective. What I wasn't prepared for was – the wonderful Palestinian people, the times that we had one-on-one conversations, either in their home or in their place of business. I was thrilled to be able to stay in Palestine for those 12 days. And the children. I'm a retired registered nurse. I have great compassion for those who hurt. And yet the little children had so much love and acceptance in their eyes and in their hearts. The trip to the refugee camps, which is like an American ghetto, unbelievable, that the Palestinians live in. And yet they smiled. They were welcoming. They were loving people.
Diane, give us a little bit of what happened during the 12 days you were there on this tour organized by John Sutherland. Of Palestine and Israel. You stayed in Palestine, in Beit Jala. You stay always in one place?
We stayed for the first week in
Beit
Jala in the Lutheran complex there. and then moved to a nearby hotel in Bethlehem.
And are you yourself Lutheran?
No, I'm not.
You said Christian. What type?
Christian Reform denomination and Christian.
All right. And so you stayed in 1 week in Bet Jala at this Lutheran church and a boys' home where young boys live through high school age. Mm. And then you were in a hotel in Bethlehem.
In Bethlehem.
What was it like to be in Bethlehem?
Bethlehem is not a quiet little village, as the song would go. It is a bustling small town. It is hilly.
Largely Muslim.
Largely Muslim, but so welcoming. And shopkeepers were fun to talk to. Everybody was welcoming. I just certainly would like to go back, and I would certainly encourage any listener who has not been there to please go to Bethlehem.
Now, does the separation wall that the Israelis have been building go anywhere near Bet Jala and Bethlehem?
Of course, it cuts Bethlehem off and Bet Jala off from Jerusalem. It is, I did not expect anything like that. It is the most horrid and ugly thing I have ever seen.
What's it look like?
It is 25 to 30 feet tall. It is gray slabs of concrete.
Thick?
Thick gray slabs of concrete with cameras and guard towers. You cannot take a picture of the armed Israeli soldiers as they come on your bus.
Why not?
Because they will take your camera away or smash your...
So is that a rule, a law in Israel, or is that just known?
It's just done.
I see. Can you take pictures of the wall?
I took a lot of pictures of the wall. Oh. They are on our blog site.
What's your blog site?
It's www.hpcrc.org.
Christian Reformed Church?
Ah, Hessel Park Christian Reformed Church, yes. .org.
We'll charge you for that little advertisement later.
The wall divides. It divides families. It divides villages. It divides farmers from their crops. It divides everything.
And it's primarily on Palestinian land. I read in an article this morning in the News Gazette written by one of our guests here today, Gary Storm, and I think your spouse also's name was on that.
Absolutely.
I've forgotten her name. Jamie, that's right. So did that surprise you, where the wall was and what it looked like?
It surprised me where it was. Everywhere we traveled, you could see the wall. North, south, east, west. We traveled all over many, many towns and villages, and it's on the horizon. It's everywhere.
Now, when you traveled on the Israeli side of this division, wherever it should be, could you understand why Israelis would want to build the wall, need to build the wall for their own safety?
I can certainly appreciate that. But not the wall. There are other ways.
I see. Gary, any thoughts on that?
Well, I think that I would share the view that it was just ubiquitous. I mean, everywhere we went, you saw, you know, the wall. I think that the one thing that was just impossible to get a sense of until you were there was just how inconvenient it made life, daily life, everyday life. We would get up in the morning and typically have breakfast at the center where we were staying. but then load into the bus, and we would have to leave through the wall exit at Bethlehem.
A checkpoint.
A checkpoint, and it was a checkpoint that was through the wall. There are other checkpoints that were simply located on Israeli highways in various locations. You literally would have no idea how long it was going to take you once you arrived at a checkpoint. It was about 6 miles from Bethlehem into Jerusalem, and we made three different trips into Jerusalem.
Only six miles between Bethlehem, which is in Palestinian territory, and Jerusalem.
Right. And and it could take anywhere from literally a few minutes wait at the checkpoint to 40 minutes or more. And I think one of the real frustrations that was expressed by many Palestinian people that we had a chance to talk with was just how impossible it was either to reliably make an appointment and make it at a time that you hope to be there for.
And if you're fortunate enough to have a job as a Palestinian,
exactly.
I know from our trip there, how do you show up at work on time?
Exactly.
How early do you have to leave?
Yeah, and equally disturbing would be medical and social service, especially emergency situations. And there have been a number of instances where babies have been born at checkpoints and people have died at checkpoints. It really, until you're there, you just don't realize the inconvenience and the disruption that those checkpoints create.
John, I remember you told us on an earlier program that the Palestinian population in Israel has really shrunk because it's hard to find a job, to make a living, to educate your children, to live a decent life. The people have left that country if they could find a way. Is that still happening?
Many of the Palestinian people are looking for ways to emigrate.
Somewhere else.
Yeah. Many have emigrated to the United States, to various countries of Europe. A great number have emigrated to South America. And it's usually done on the basis of seeking better employment. Many of the young couples, I know several, who emigrated while I was living there, and we hated to see them go, but we knew it was the only chance that their children had to grow up with a career and a future.
Let's talk a little bit about Bethlehem specifically. John, tell us about how the holy Christian sites there are sort of divvied up among the various Christian interests.
Well, it's not as noticeable in Bethlehem as it is in Jerusalem. But at the center of Bethlehem, and its reason for being famous, is the ancient Church of the Nativity, which marks the spot where Jesus was born. Now, this is celebrated, I should add, at several different times in the year because the different denominations of Christians celebrate Christmas on different dates. So it sort of extends the Christmas season.
You mean Christians can't even agree among themselves?
Amazing. The Orthodox calendar typically is 13 days later than the Catholic and Protestant calendar due to the fact back in the 18th century or whenever there was a change in the Gregorian calendar change took place. They lost several days and the Orthodox Church stuck to the old system. On top of that, the Armenians have Christmas later in January. So you can go at different times of the year and celebrate the holy days. Since the Orthodox are the largest group, actually their Christmas is the most impressive. So you can finish Christmas in the United States and go off to the Holy Land and take it in again if you want to.
I was reading this morning Garrison Keillor's amusing op-ed piece about Bethlehem and celebrating Christmas, and he was objecting to Unitarian Universalists having rewritten Silent Night to make it more about night and beauty than about the birth of Jesus. But it reminded me, and one thing you just said reminded me, that there is some scholarly debate about whether Jesus really could have been born in Bethlehem, since his family came from Nazareth and it's a very long way away, and there's never been found any historical evidence that there was a census taken at that time. And some people think, well, he was much more likely born in Nazareth, and this was later stories about Bethlehem to make it tie in with the birth of where David was born.
Is that talked about
at all in Bethlehem or never?
No. It also is to add to the fulfillment of the prophecy of Micah.
Sure.
That the king would be born in Bethlehem.
Right. Which Christians interpret to refer to Jesus.
Exactly.
And Jews say, not yet.
There's no historical evidence for Jesus having been born anywhere else either.
True.
In Nazareth, for instance, except that he was known through his lifetime, as far as we can tell, as Jesus of Nazareth.
Yeah.
Like so many other holy sites, if he wasn't born in Bethlehem, he should have been.
We're about halfway through our Keeping the Faith program this afternoon. It's a live program on December 20. We're talking about Bethlehem today and the situation in Palestine and Israel with three folks who just spent 12 days last month in Palestine. And we're talking with John Sutherland, a Lutheran pastor from Champaign-Urbana, a longtime campus minister here, now retired, who after his retirement spent two solid years as a volunteer in a Lutheran church in Bet Jala, which is right next to Bethlehem. We're also talking with Diane Wardrop and Gary Storm, who went on this trip with 16 other folks for 12 days. If listeners would like to call in with a question or comment, we're eager to have you join our conversation. 333-9455 is the local number, long distance, toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. Coming up on Keeping the Faith in the next few weeks, on December 27th, Allison Fromm, a graduate student in choral conducting, will be our guest. She commutes regularly back to the East Coast to conduct a choir there called Joyful Noise, made up of children who are special children. We're going to be talking with her live in the studio next week and by phone with a very well-known, internationally known composer and conductor, Alice Parker, who is a strong supporter of this choral endeavor that Allison Fromm has been doing for some years. So we'll be hearing some music and on the 27th of December and interviewing those folks live. In January, we have a very interesting program scheduled with Paul Knitter, spelled K-N-I-T-T-E-R, about his most recent book called Buddhist and Christian. Buddhist and Christian. That'll be Paul Knitter coming up in January on Keeping the Faith. Let me mention that the University YMCA here at the University of Illinois has been a longtime supporter of Keeping the Faith, and they're taking a little bit of a holiday over the next couple weeks, but starting in January, they'll be back with their programs for the community, such as Friday Forum and Know Your University on Tuesday noons and Friday noons, and we'll be telling you more about those programs as we get into January. Let me also mention that another University of Illinois program that some listeners to this program might have an interest in is the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute. There are several programs that deal with religious, ethical, spiritual matters offered by OLLI for people who are 50 years old or retired, or both, 50 years old or older, or retired or both. OLLI are classes held here at the university taught by a number of interesting folks. I'm offering one course. Sometimes I'm interesting. I'm offering another course next semester, this time on the great world religions. Are there common threads? It's an 8-week course on Tuesday afternoons from 3:30 to 5. If you'd like more information about it, go to OLLI, that's O-L-L-I, .illinois.edu. You'll find that course and several other courses that deal with these kinds of issues and a lot of just fun things you might want to take advantage of. Well, I see we have a caller waiting on line one, so let's go to that caller from Urbana. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Hello. I was just listening to your program, and I'm enjoying it. And I had a small correction to make about the different dates when Christmas is celebrated in the Holy Land itself. You mentioned that Christian Orthodox is 13 days after the Catholic and Protestant Christmas. Actually, it's a little bit more complicated than that. Within Christian Orthodox, actually, Greek Orthodox is same date as Protestant and Catholic, meaning the 25th of December. And it's only Serbian and Russian Orthodox, which are 13 days later by the older calendar. So I just wanted to make that correction, which makes things even more complicated than you would think. But Greek Orthodox is together with the Protestant and Catholic on the 25th of December.
And here we thought Orthodox had all agreed.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. But,
well, thank you for that information. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
And again, other callers are welcome. Give us a call, 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. Well, let's talk about the political situation. That may generate a few calls. How bad is it, Gary?
Well, it's difficult. I mean, I think what we had an opportunity to do was to meet a lot of people, Arab, a mix of Christian and Muslim, who lived in the town of Bet Jala. And in our journeys, we also had a chance to meet shopkeepers and others who were willing to take the time and talk with us. So we really didn't see politics all that directly discussed oftentimes. I think what we saw was the consequences in the lives of the people who live there that we've referred to already. And you just have to kind of induct, from that situation outward. And I've had a chance over the last couple of years, especially since meeting Anna Balzer, to do a little bit of reading. And by the way, she has a book that I would recommend highly. And her last name is Balzer. She's written a book called Witness in Palestine, Journal of a Jewish American Woman in the Occupied Territories. I think many of us read Jimmy Carter's book called Peace, Not Apartheid before we left. At least I know some of us did. And another book that I had read is Rashid Khalidi's book called The Iron Cage, The Story of Palestinian Struggle for Statehood. And so I really think that I had more of an opportunity to shape my own sense of the politics and the problems in this region through, those readings than I did through direct discussions. But it was so clear that the level of frustration continued to exist and might even be increasing. And I think if I had just one general observation to make, it would be that it seems to me very counterproductive to impose all of these growing restrictions on the Palestinian people and not expect that what you would get in response was an increasing sense of frustration and anger and violence. It just seemed that ever, as John said a little while ago, that when you have an opportunity to live with and meet and talk with everyday people, that there's just this sense that it seems so ridiculous that we can't figure out ways to just open these areas to more normal, everyday economic life and so forth.
Let me ask about settlements. That's one of the big issues currently. President Obama's administration has put apparently some pressure on the Israeli government to stop expanding the settlements in Palestinian territories and the West Bank of Jerusalem. What did you see of the settlements when you were there? Diane, did you get to see any settlements?
We did, as we journeyed north up along the Jordan River up toward the Sea of Galilee. We saw settlements. I think it's interesting that, first of all, they're in Palestinian territory. Secondly, they have barbed wire around them, concertina wire, or fences
razor
with concertina.
Yeah,
razor wire at the top.
Like we have on our prisons.
They also, a large percentage of the Israeli military protects these settlements. They are deployed to these settlements. So they're settlements on the Palestinian territory, but they certainly have a lot of fear to protect themselves.
Okay. John, you've, in your 2 years there, plus this most recent trip, you've seen settlements expand?
Yes, they continue to grow, despite anything that is promised or signed or hoped for. The building of settlements, these are settlements of Jewish people living on Palestinian territory, land that is not reimbursed or bought, but that is simply taken. And there are about at least 300 settlements in the West Bank. So the Jewish and the Arab people are very much intermixed as far as their locations. And the idea is, behind this, is to make it virtually impossible for the establishment of a Palestinian territory,
or
exclusively an Arab state.
Now, in Bethlehem, are there settlements nearby?
Oh, yes.
How close?
Next door. We had, in the Bethlehem area, in Beit Jala, you just look across the valley and you see a very large settlement looming over at you. On the other side of Bethlehem is a much newer settlement, one that has been built since the so-called Norwegian Agreement a decade ago. And we should mention that there are also three large refugee camps in Bethlehem. So
now,
all of
what exactly is a refugee camp? How is that? Are there people who are forced to live there?
At the war of 1948, when Israel became a state, thousands and thousands of Arab people were displaced from their homes and were relocated into camps that were set up by the United Nations. These were originally tent camps, three in the Bethlehem area, many others throughout the West Bank and in other countries, Lebanon, and Jordan, for instance.
But these were Arab Palestinians who were forced there 50 years ago by the UN, but haven't they been free to leave at any time since?
They are free to move, but they are so impoverished that there's nowhere they can go. So what we have, the tents have been replaced by concrete buildings.
And other Arab countries nearby will not accept them or help them move?
they have no resources for that either. Most of the Arab countries nearby already are hosting hundreds of thousands of Palestinian refugees. As I mentioned, Jordan is half refugees from Palestine.
I see. And when John mentioned thousands and thousands after the 48 war, the figure that I've read is something in the range of 500 to 700,000. So those are huge, huge numbers. Diane had mentioned that we had had an opportunity to visit a couple of refugee camps located right there in the Bethlehem area. One of them served or was the home to 12,000 people. And it turns out that the manager of the guest house where we were staying was actually raised there in the boys' home that was affiliated with the complex. But his family had lived in this village or this refugee camp for all of those years.
And still does.
Yeah, we met his father, for example.
We have as our guest today three folks who recently came back from Palestine: Gary Storm, John Setterland, a Lutheran pastor who organized the trip, and Diane Wardrop, a registered nurse, retired. Gary is a retired University of Illinois at Springfield professor. We welcome calls, 333-9455, 1-800-222-9455. If it's long distance, it's toll-free. We're happy to have callers participate. As you heard at the beginning of the show, opinions expressed here are solely those of the participants. Usually that's played at the end, but through a slip of the finger, you heard that first. Of course, callers can express their opinions as well. And we do have a couple callers I see waiting now. Let's go to line number one. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith, on line number one in Champaign.
Yes. I have a number of problems with some of the things that have been said in terms of accuracy and one-sidedness. Let me start, and I'll just go through them quickly and then listen to your responses. First, it seems like we're getting a very distorted and one-sided view. For instance, when they talked about the refugee camps in the West Bank, we need to remember that from 48 to 67, this area was under Jordanian control. So there was no need to have refugee camps there. But this was the choice of the Jordanians. Now, but let's go a little further to the barrier, the separation barrier that the storms seem to have such problems with, which they wrote a commentary in today's News Gazette about. The creation of the separation barrier, which is part chain link fence and part wall, was created after there had been numerous suicide terrorist bombing in Israel by Palestinians. Between October 2000 and October 2006, there were 167 suicide bombers, plus other suicide attacks, whereby hundreds of Israeli Jews were killed and thousands were maimed. This was children, men, and women. In response to that, the Israeli government imposed restrictions on the Palestinian community. I don't see, and the restrictions are unfortunate, but the Palestinian community has been the source of the terrorist bombings, the suicide bombers, and they continue to honor and praise them and encourage them. So I think we need to look at the unfortunate consequence of unwillingness to make peace on the part of some aspects and some segments of the Palestinian community, and that the restrictions which Gary and some of the others are talking about is a result of the actions. It's a cause and effect, a result of actions which the Palestinians have undertaken. There's a real need for peace because we've got people, two sets of people, who have a claim to the same land, who both claim this is our homeland. And how do you encourage peace? Unfortunately, what I hear from the pastor And what I hear from Gary, and I heard it from Gary before he left, was a one-sided pro-Palestinian position, which is fine. It's a legitimate position, but it doesn't really encourage peace. This is a time that we need to encourage peace. As many traditions say, blessed are the peacemakers. I'm sorry, but I don't hear peacemaking from these speakers. What I hear is a position which makes one side right and one side wrong. And the fact is, when they, what they often present is distorted views of reality.
Thank you for your comments. Let's have a response from our guests. Diane, let's start with you as from a nurse's perspective.
Well, I would certainly agree with the caller, the need for peace, the need for peace in that area for both sides. I would start with the land that was given to the State of Israel in 1949, the 51%, and the 48%, 49% given to the Palestinians. And it's clear now that Israel does occupy 70-some percent of the land. How did they get there? They got there through settlements and aggressive tactics in the Palestinian land.
Was so, that in response to violence?
There is violence on both sides. There's no doubt about that. But if my home were bulldozed or my home had a 30-foot-high concrete wall put around it, I suppose I would be very angry. It's difficult. It's very difficult to understand this, to see this. In America, to think about it without actually seeing it. I've thought about it coming home, and I thought, if I live in St. Joseph, so if there was a separation wall put down I-74 and the farmer on the north side had property on the south side, but there was a checkpoint and he could not go through, I could certainly see violence coming from behind that. So, yes, I agree with the caller. We need peace. But we need peace and a proper sharing of the land.
I want our other guests to have a chance to respond, too, but we have two callers waiting. Let's go to line two first in Urbana. Line number two, you're on Keeping the Faith.
Yes, about the refugees. By international law, aren't the Israelis obligated to repatriate them?
Anybody know?
I couldn't tell you
I
that.
I don't know law.
My sense is that I can't quote the specific law or treaties that bind them to that.
Perhaps our caller has some information to share.
Well, yes, they are in part by the Geneva Conventions, but the international law in general, it is not permissible to wage a war of conquest. The Germans were forced to return their conquered lands after the Second World War.
I think that the so-called right of return, which is a dream for many of the old Palestinians, has simply disappeared from possibility.
Well, I'm not so sure about that. Is there any possibility other than a single state solution today? The Israelis control not only 70% of the land, but I think better than 90% of the water.
I don't see how a divided land will ever function as two states because of the very things you mentioned, that they share the same water, electricity, everything. It's a small area to begin with. And as one of my friends there said, an Arab friend said about the people of Jerusalem and the people of Israel, he said, we need them, and they need us.
And how small is the territory that's now Palestinian territory?
I think that's a very true statement, and I would want to point out that for about 1,400 years, or not 1,400, but yes, 1,400 years, they lived in harmony. That the population of Palestine included not only Jews, Christians, and Muslims, but also several other groups. And until the Zionists, Europeans, arrived in the late 1800s, there was more peace there than there was in Europe.
Well, we thank you very much for your call, and thank you for your comments.
Okay.
We have another caller waiting on line three. Let's go to that caller in Champaign. Yes, you're on the air.
Hello. I enjoy very much your program. It's extremely interesting, and it's especially interesting to me because last summer I traveled to Israel, Palestine, on a religious, ecumenical Christian mission. And the interesting thing, my impressions were completely different from the impressions that have been shared with all of us by the speakers. First of all, we don't realize, living in the United States, or even in Western Europe, how small Israel is. It's an extremely small country, and I think it's smaller than the state of Illinois.
About half the size of Illinois, I think.
Half the size of the state of Illinois. It's a country, it's the only democratic country in the area, and this is the country that's surrounded by millions of hostile people who basically would like to destroy that country. I heard many times on different sites telling that we would like to see Jews in the sea. And this is a country that from its beginning, from its insertion, was fighting for its survival. Moreover, the country was established after the terrible catastrophe. As you know, Jews have been persecuted for 2,000 years. It's a nation that gave Christ to the world, that gave all apostles, Virgin Mary, we forget that she was a Jew. And today, for centuries, Jews were blamed for crucifying Christ, which is a complete absurd. And for centuries, for millennia, they have been persecuted. The Pope only in 1968 announced that Jews are not guilty of crucifying Christ. Anyhow, Israel was established in response to the Holocaust. And since its inception, this very, very small country has been fighting for its existence. Many lands that the bulk of the land that Israel owns was bought from Palestinians. Moreover, I have been on both sides, and I talked to different people on both sides. But historically, what is interesting, that all these so-called Palestinian people, they haven't been at all invited by their neighbors. They established themselves once in Jordan, and it was such a disaster that the king of Jordan, who is an extremely loyal, who was an extremely loyal and interesting man and cultured, he was forced to kick them out. Then they went to Lebanon, and they entirely destroyed that country. Basically, their Arab brothers are not interested in having them because they understand that these are people that are useful for them politically for the destruction of Israel, but they don't want to have them on their own land. And what I would like to say is that I was impressed that, first of all, I visited...
We're about out of time, and I'm afraid I'm going to have to cut you off, but I think you've...
Last thing, I visited areas, Arab areas in Jerusalem, and I was impressed by very rich buildings.
Okay, I want to give our guests a chance to respond to those issues you just raised. Gary, would you like to make some comments?
Well, what I'd like to do is go back to a couple of the earlier comments, if I could, just because we haven't had a chance to comment on those. I think it really is important to clarify just whether or not it's reasonable to view Israel as an occupying power. And I do think that if we, though it's true that dating back to 48, there was controversy over, quote, this occupying the same land, I think that from the 67 war on, it's been pretty much the sentiment of international bodies that it was important to make an effort to clearly distinguish areas that would be designated as those that should be developed for and by the Palestinians, and those that were designated as Israeli. And I think that from my perspective, many of the restrictions that we've been talking about tonight do more to complicate and frustrate efforts to lay a meaningful peace than they do to protect the security of Israel. I just, as I said earlier, I think it's counterproductive to have established as many of these restrictions. I do think that there are extreme elements on both sides that those voices need to be moderated and to some degree quelled by forces within each camp. I would hope that there are significant moderate voices both within Israel and within Palestine. Clearly, we saw those voices as being dominant in our experiences in Palestine. And we need to find new avenues for giving more importance and
we're down to our last couple of minutes.
Right.
We have a caller who wants to make a point. You have about 30 seconds, please.
Yes. The claim is made that the Israelis purchased the land from Jordanians that they now occupy. They did not. They purchased this land from Turks in Turkey who claimed their right to the land from the Ottoman Empire. They did not buy it from Jordanians. Or not Jordanians, but Palestinians. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me remind listeners that this is a live program, and we have a varied guests on it. We have had Israelis on the program, and perhaps those programs were one-sided as well. But we also are happy to have people call and make comments. John, we are down just the last couple seconds. Any last comment from you since you organized this trip? You're going to do it again, I understand.
I will plan to do another trip next fall, and I would love if I could get a tour group as good as the one I had. It'll be a real inspiration to me.
If people would like information about that, how may they find out about another tour to Palestine?
Well, they could. The fastest way would be to call me, 217-828-1038. And I will get a brochure to them as fast as I can.
People who'd like to contact Pastor Sutherland, 217-828-1038. I'm Steve Shoemaker. Our guests today have been John Sutherland, Lutheran pastor, Gary Storm, University of Illinois Springfield professor, Diane Wardrop, registered nurse, all who spent 12 days in Palestine recently. John was there for 2 years earlier. And we've talked to him previously on this program. Keeping the Faith will be on again next week. We'll be talking with Allison Fromm and Alice Parker about a choral group called Joyful Noise. Coming up in January, Paul Nitter will be our guest, the author of a recent book, Buddhist and Christian. Again, people interested in the Ali program on the world's great religions, are there common threads that I'll be teaching on Tuesdays, ali.illinois.edu. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Hi, this is Julie Pride, administrator of the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District. I have been waiting a very long time to deliver this message to seniors. Senior 65 years and older, the H1N1 flu vaccine is now available for you. In fact, the H1N1 vaccine is now available to everyone, regardless of age, health condition, or residency. Vaccine is available at many locations throughout Champaign County, including Champaign-Urbana Public Health District, Carl Clinic, and Christie Clinic. You can get a free vaccine at Champaign-Urbana Public Health District Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Just walk in. Visit willconnect.org/health and click on the Illinois map to find your public health department, or call my office for help at 217-352-7961.
A Florida housewife named Katie has an unusual affliction. Occasionally, for no rhyme or reason, thin pieces of gold-colored foil appear spontaneously on her skin. Paranormal researchers are stumped. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge, Exploring Magic. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening at 7.
This is WILL AM 580 and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 Urbana.